Okay, we've got open lines for you. More to come in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And those of you, of course, who observe Easter, I hope you have a great time Sunday with your friends or family or whatever you do. And enjoy. Go hunt for the Easter eggs. Let's go back to the phones now. Shirley is in Monticello, Iowa. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning. How are you this?
I'm doing fine.
Day coming up.
It's starting to warm up again. It's nice.
It's 44 degrees here.
Right now?
Yeah, right now.
Well, that's not bad. That's not for Iowa. That's not bad at all. What's going on, Cheryl?
Well, I have insight into this, and I've been, you know, tested for being abnormal. And they could not find anything wrong with me. That I went through the whole system, and they tested me in every area, and they said everything you said is true, and they found it was true. I have been in on that base, on the Air Force base in Texas. I was with a trucker that left Iowa here, and I want to know what it was like to be. You know, with like the other girls who were servers at my restaurant. I worked at a restaurant in Iowa here that was catering to truckers, a truck stop where they get gas and everything in a motel. Mm-hmm. And a guy came in, and I was always unhappy, and I told him how unhappy I was. He actually picked me up and my daughter and took me down to the Air Force base. He was going down there with a nuclear reactor on the back of his semi because he worked. He had a contract with the government, with his company, and he took me on that base with my daughter, and I actually got out of that semi and saw this base and talked to the commanding officer down there. He wanted to know what I was doing there, and I said, I'm here with this trucker, and the trucker said, you're supposed to stay inside of this cab. You're not supposed to divulge you're in there. Well, when I got out, I happened to see and I happened to observe they were picking up he was picking up one of those army trucks to get fixed. He had tickets somewhere to get fixed. But he ran all over for the government. And he told me it's true. They have an army base under the ground, and it's under the Mojave Desert. And I've had other people that work there, and I can't divulge who I'm talking about on these people because they got affiliated with the government. And one guy was that I know said he took food down there. He could go just to a certain point. He couldn't go past that. He was in the Navy delivering goods. And he said below that desert, it goes from Texas to California, and it's under the Mojave Desert. It's truly there.
Did any of them tell you what they thought was going on there?
Yeah, they said there's lights underneath there. It's an underground city. And they actually have malls. They actually have homes. They have industries under the ground, everything.
And so a whole population of people down there.
Yes. And the president's going to go down there, and so is the cabinet. If there's a war, they're going to go right down there. They're going to be safe as can be because they've got the jets already to go.
Well, we've always believed.
We're just going to have to experience a nuclear blast.
You know, the backup capital, they say was going to be Denver. I'm not sure. It's probably one of these underground facilities. I bet people would just be blown away if they saw what they look like. Shirley, thanks for the call. We go to Josh now in Dayton, Ohio. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good, Josh. Thank you.
Well, there's a few things. I've served my time in the military, and I've also dealt with truckers and so I've heard stories. I actually live right next to Wright Patt Air Force Base here in Ohio, which I'm sure most of your listeners know that after Roswell, they actually took parts of that piece up here, and that's where they had the famous either Hangar B or Hangar 13. I've talked to truckers. There was one trucker. He told me that he took a load over to the Air Force Base. He gets out. He sits in a shack with a chair as the guy. Gets in his truck, basically the ground kind of, the ramp lowers, and the trucker takes the guy's truck into the ground, and he waits about 45 minutes. The guy brings it back up empty. So
jeez, they take the whole thing. That's how they unload it then. Wow.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not allowed to go down there. He goes, I just have to let the guy take my truck. But on another note, I'll be out in Arizona in May, so hopefully I can run into you, sir.
Sure, love to meet you.
But there's a couple things. I had a dream a couple years back that I know a lot of. I grew up being raised LDS, and I know at one point when the church was first started, somebody had given a talk about being the beginning of the 11th hour. You know, the hour handed has struck the 11th hour. About 5-6 years ago, I actually had a dream that it was telling me that we were at like 5 minutes till midnight. So it was kind of strange to see that we'd gone over about, I think it was about 150 years or so, and it'd been 55 minutes on that kind of clock. So
that's getting way too close for comfort, that's for sure. But Josh, yeah, track the information on our calendar at coasttocoastam.com. I'm also going to be in Oregon in May for a major UFO event as well. We go to Daniel now in Wichita, Kansas. Welcome to the show. Hi, Daniel. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I talked to you, I think, Tuesday night when you had your tax man on.
Bill Spillane, okay.
Yeah, and I told you of how I went from real high income to low income. But two things I want to talk to you about tonight. I got my eyes on that silver wing V, and I put a 10 by 50 Zeiss binoculars on it. And I've been in aircraft all my life, and I tell you what, I've never seen nothing like this. I saw it for probably, 35 seconds. And,
that's long enough to see something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it had contrails, but I couldn't see any engines. And I could just make out it was a delta wing, whatever it was. And, it was strange. But what I wanted to talk to you about tonight is you on your show, every time I go out to VA, there's these big signs that say, be prepared, get prepared. The federal government is putting on commercials that are showing houses blowing up and people flying around the homes, and they say, be prepared. Well, I decided Wednesday at noon to shut everything off.
What do you mean, shut everything off?
I shut my electricity off, the fuse box, turned my gas off.
Wow.
At the meter, went out to the meter, pulled the lid, shut my water off.
Just to test yourself?
Pardon me?
To test yourself?
Yeah. I said, I'm going to go 72 hours, or I'm going to go as long as I can within that 72 hours. I'm at 62 hours right now. And I've wrote down some stuff that I didn't realize. And what I want to try, thank God, being here in Kansas, you never know what the weather's going to be like.
That's right.
It has been fairly mild. So I haven't been tested to the extremes of weather. And I haven't been tested on defense.
So you've been lucky so far. Are you going nuts, though, without the conveniences?
Right. The only thing I've allowed myself to do is I have a generator. I kept my cell phone charged, but I'm not answering it, and it was to call you and let you know some of the things that I found so far. And what I want to do, I want to go in the heat of July and go a full week and use this to prepare me for that, to see if I can do that.
Are you going to store food and water? You got to do that, right?
Right. Well, I try to keep 30 days for my animals. I have two cats. I try to keep 30 days for me. But I'm really getting tired of eating rice.
Well, there's more than that. Go to foodinsurance.com. There's all kinds of stuff there for you.
I know. And it's a good deal also. But at my income, I have to do other things. And the main things that I wished I had more of was cat litter, salt, and I had 55 gallons of water to start. And I tell you what, from now on, I'm going to store 255 gallons.
Wow. Okay, so you learned something there.
I'm running out.
Yeah.
I have plenty. I have 40 gallons of gas for my generator, and I learned that do not try to run your refrigerator on a generator.
Eats too much, doesn't it?
Right. And I have not plugged my washer or dryer up on a generator. I'm just dealing with, I have enough clean clothes to keep me going.
What's the first thing you're going to do when you turn the power back on?
Take a hot shower.
All right. Well, let me tell you, Dan, it's the great experiment. Let's go to Toronto. Joel is with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Joel, good morning to you.
Oh, is that me?
Yes, sir. It's Joel.
You said Joel. I thought you were talking to somebody else.
Yeah, it's Joel on the old computer, but it's Joe? Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Joel, you're the best. I'm very nervous right now. I can't believe it. I'm on.
You got it. You made it.
That was fantastic. I called the other night. You had a guy named Bruce with the Bermuda Triangle stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was great. You were talking about serendipity, synchronicity,
mm-hmm.
and all that stuff, and I thought, wow. And the first thing that got me interested in the whole deal was the Bermuda Triangle. I said, I got to call in tonight. But a buddy of mine had said to me about 3 weeks ago, he goes, Joe, I know what happened. I know where the plane is. I know what happened. I said, what happened? He said, the co-pilot wanted to kill himself. And this was before all this few little details in the last few days came out about the co-pilot. It was about 3 weeks ago. I said, what happened? He goes, he wanted to kill himself. There was a struggle. And that's why the plane did all this meandering and stuff like that. There was a struggle with him and the captain. Finally, he got his way, the co-pilot, and he crashed it. And he claims it's about 5 miles out. No more than 5 miles out.
In the ocean?
In the ocean, right. Yeah, 5 miles out from that area that the plane went off radar or whatever.
Which would not be by Perth in Australia. That's way off course, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure now.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was no details. He didn't tell me. I didn't ask him any. Geographically, I wasn't even clear about the whole thing. I didn't really follow.
Joe, it's got to be one of the strangest things I've ever seen.
Right.
Stories. Just strange.
And, the fog, I mean, that electronic fog stuff was possible and all that, but my buddy, I give him a lot of credit because he's come up with, over the years that I've known him, come up with a few things that hit the nail on the head. So I'm going to have to say that. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I got cut because my phone cuts out every once in a while. I give this guy a lot of credit and guarantee that's what it's going to be. He said it's going to be found and it's going to be, if there's any recordings, the black box, even if the signal dies, they still can retrieve the information that's on there, right?
Well, if they find it. But, if it's 14,000 feet down, and I think those pings have finally stopped.
Yeah, they have stopped. That's right.
I don't think they're going to find it unless one of those little submersibles, you know,
somehow
runs into it. Yeah.
By fluke, and I asked him, I said, do you think they're going to find it? He said, yes, they will. And it won't be that long. That's what he says, and I believe it to be true.
Yeah, let's hope they do. Hey, Joel, thanks for calling. Love you folks in Toronto. Let's go up to Jason in Lancaster, South Carolina. Welcome to the program. Hello, Jason.
Hi, George. Hey, man, I just want to say thank you for keeping me company every night while I work night shift.
Always,
you're like the friend in my headphones.
Good.
Hey, wanted to tell you about an event that happened to me on March the 22nd. I was sitting on the living room couch with my wife, and all of a sudden, I heard this very loud boom, and immediately followed by what I thought was an earthquake. I mean, pictures fell off the wall.
Wow.
It was very intense. And I kind of panicked for a minute. I was like, what the heck was that? I was like, I'm pretty sure that was some type of a bomb or explosion.
And did she heard it too?
Oh, yeah. She was asleep next to me, and she woke up. She was like, what was that? And, I called the local 911, and I said, hey, have you had reports of an explosion anywhere or a bomb? And they said, well, we don't know, sir, but we felt it here at the station. You know, we think it's an earthquake, and our lines are getting flooded. We got to call you back. They hung up. And, of course, you know, now with social media and Twitter and all that, it took about 2 hours for me to discover that this was not an earthquake, that it was a home that exploded 6 miles away from me.
Oh, natural gas?
I don't know. Well, see, here's the thing, is people report hearing and feeling the shockwave of this explosion up to 12 miles away. And, of course, immediately they said, well, you know, we think it's natural gas, but it's under investigation. And the news people just dropped it after that. But I just was not convinced. I said, there's no way that's a natural gas. I mean, natural gas, you know, it's not that powerful. So I called an explosions expert, and he, you know, long story short, basically when I gave him all the details, he said, no, there's no way this was a natural gas. It does not produce a shockwave like that. He explained to me the difference between combustion and detonation, you know, gas combusts, whereas things like C4 things detonate. And so I was thinking, man, what if this was some, you know, what I consider all possibilities. What if it was like a drone strike?
Who are the people in the house? Do you know?
What doesn't add up. They happen to be out of town, and their names have not been released. There's been no pictures. There's been no neighbors interviewed. They've not given a statement. When a reporter finally tried to get a statement, all the fire chief said was, well, they're too upset to give any statements. Well, it's like this family didn't exist.
Yeah. How about the neighbors? Did anybody interview them? You know, who are these people?
No, well, they were out in the country, and the neighbors, you know, weren't like a neighborhood thing. So, I don't know. I emailed you and Linda Moultonhowe and Jesse, and I'm trying to think who do you think would be good at investigating to get to the bottom of this? Because what happened is the first 12 hours, the local fire department was investigating. And then after that, they were literally quarantined. This whole place has been quarantined. The ATF and FBI have moved in.
This is bizarre.
Yeah, it's been total media blackout. I've called the sheriff and fire chief, and they say, we can't talk about it. We're not even doing the investigation anymore. I mean, it's really bizarre.
What if these people, Jason, what if they were manufacturing methamphetamine and their lab blew up? Is that possible? Which would have been in the house.
Yeah, I think that would have to be a really big meth lab. And another thing I'm considering is like, well, what if it's, you know, one of these homeland terrorist cells that they talk about? Wouldn't we have the right to know about that?
That's true.
You know, they're making bombs that powerful.
And something went awry and it just blew up on them.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a story about 3 weeks ago about a bomb instructor, a suicide bomb instructor, blew himself up by accident. Something went wrong with his little strapped-on bomb case.
Yeah.
So it's possible. What if these people were making bombs and they blew the place up, but were there reports of any bodies or death?
No death, no injuries. They found debris from the house. This was a one-story, 2,000-square-foot brick house. They found debris from the house over a mile away.
Unbelievable. A mile away?
A mile away. And, I mean, this was really something.
All right,
so I'm just
friend.
Trying to figure out, who do you think should investigate?
That's a Linda Moultonhowe story, and I'm glad you sent her some information. We're going to be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with our special tribute to the late Michael Rupert. Well, as I mentioned earlier this week, nationally known author Michael Rupert has died. He died Sunday of an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound. He was 63. He was a former Los Angeles Police Department officer, later became a political activist. He was found dead where he'd been staying in a trailer in Oregon for a few months. Another very strange story. Up next, a past interview with Michael Rupert, our tribute to truly a great patriot. Michael, we're talking about some of the most pressing issues that are out there facing us. And of course, you've looked at peak oil. You know how I believe, but I want your take on this. Tell me about peak oil here in California. We're, you know, paying outrageous prices for gasoline. What's going on?
Well, within the broader construct of a peak in global oil production, which is documented, especially in terms of conventional oil, you'll give me that.
Yes.
Okay. That's documented. So that's the broader market constraints. Within that, there's a whole lot of corruption that takes place. So, but Matthew Simmons, who was the world's largest energy investment banker, was a dear friend of mine. He was very outspoken. He died suddenly during a Deepwater Horizon. He would explain it and say, what you see in California has to do with certain market anomalies there, where the refineries are and how the markets are laid out, but it doesn't escape. So basically what you're looking at as the energy situation gets more strained is what's happening in California now is going to be coming to a gas station near the rest of the world very soon.
I think you're right. And how long can we sustain that?
We can't.
No.
And really, it's kind of foolish to ask how long you can sustain it once you know it's terminal. The idea is to get on a lifeboat once you know the Titanic is going down, which requires a total, complete, dramatic restructuring of human civilization, of course, and that's what my movie was all about.
But you're not into nuclear power, right?
Not at all, no.
How come?
Well, Fukushima is a good reason.
Three Mile Island's a second reason. Chernobyl.
The fact that no one knows where to store the radioactive waste, and nobody now especially is spending money to build any shelters. We had a documentary on CollapseNet from Finland. There's a great project in Finland that they're showing real responsibility, but there's 450 nuclear reactors in the world. And as the economic picture worsens and as resources become more scarce and as civilization crumbles, the technical expertise to maintain those reactors is evaporating with it. So we run the risk of having 450 meltdowns. That will kill everything on the planet.
Well, I was going to say, if we get hit by an X flare that shuts down power around this planet, we don't have enough generators to keep these plants cool. We're going to have a meltdown.
Well,
everywhere.
That's happening actually now in terms of diesel fuel. Japan had shut down almost all of its, I think it's 18 reactors. I think one or two that they're trying to start up again. But all that electricity came out. They were supplanting that with diesel-generated electricity. But then when you consider that a city of 9 million people, Lagos, Nigeria, two-thirds of the electricity is run by diesel, and diesel is now powering, replacing other forms of generation all throughout India and Pakistan, diesel fuel is critical. And there aren't enough diesel generators, and there's not enough refining capacity to refine enough diesel to do anything like keep those 450 reactors cool.
You have talked about how high technological companies and countries, when they go and collapse, they go fast. Tell me about that.
They go fast and they go spectacularly. Yes. I have my own little radio show, and last night I did it, and one story that I brought.
That's the Lifeboat Hour.
The
right?
Lifeboat Hour on the PRN. That due to the problems in Japan, one of the key diaper manufacturers in the world is down, and it's a globalized central location for diapers all over the planet.
Gosh.
And that's just the way the stuff goes.
We're looking at something that is reversible or not?
No, absolutely not reversible. And the only solution now is collapse. That's the only way out. The system has to be brought down. It's only getting more vicious, more deadly, more destructive by the day.
Then what's left after that?
Okay, what's left? What is present? Let's talk about what's present. What's present is an opportunity to flick a switch inside our heads, to change our own consciousness, to change how we choose to live in this world. We need... In the documentary Collapse, I talked about the 100th monkey syndrome. which is pretty well known. But basically, once you cross a certain threshold in a population, if it's, I think, a square root of 1%, it has been said, then all of a sudden, once you reach that, everybody changes simultaneously.
Right. Right.
And that's what we need to have happen now. But I don't think it's going to happen that way for all 7 billion souls on this planet. I am becoming more convinced on a daily basis that an evolution is coming and a liberation of human DNA.
An evolution or a revolution?
A liberation of human DNA. In other words... this is a very interesting little parallel. Let me back up just a hair here.
Okay.
Marion King Hubbard was the prophet of peak oil. He was the guy who first did the numbers and said, my God, world oil production is going to peak shortly after the turn of the century.
Okay. He was a counterpart to Thomas Gold, who believes in the abiotic oil theory.
Yeah.
They're on the far ends of the spectrum.
King Hubbard, who I believe has been thoroughly vindicated because he said U.S. oil production would peak in 1970, and it did, and they called him crazy until that happened. Then he was called to Washington to testify before Congress. He met with President Jimmy Carter, and he testified closed door in Congress. And they listened. And I had, from the wilderness, I published declassified CIA documents showing that CIA was aware of peak oil in 1973-74. So anyway, King Hubbard was trying to track down how to solve this problem, and he came to the same conclusion that I did through my own research, that we live in a world that prints money. That's all it does is print paper money, which is nothing. You can't eat paper. You can't put it in your car. And it has to be backed up by resources. It has to be backed up by energy. And when there's not enough resources or energy, then everything collapses. That's what's happening. But he traced the evil and the fundamental problem back to money, which had, quote, the origin in folkways of prehistoric origin. Now, over the course of my career, as I've been trying to understand the fundamental evil that was behind everything that is leading the world to where it is now, I concluded that until you change the way money works, you change nothing, and which is true. And then, following especially on the lead of people like George Orwell, I began to see that this all sprang back from something about 3,000 years B.C. when Jehovah came up and somebody wrote Genesis 1:28, said, be fruitful, multiply, go out and have dominion over the planet and subdue the fowl and expand. You know, and wait a minute, that was a fundamental psychotic break right there. And so I believe essentially for the last 5,000 years at least, the human race has been controlled by something that benefits by having us afraid all the time.
There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. And that
keep
age,
us on edge.
And that age is coming to an end. I mean, the Mayans, the Incans, and I've been studying.
Well, that's a good thing then.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing, and that's why when you honestly look at the Mayan prophecies, when all else fails, ask a Mayan, and you can do that on the web. And Don Alejandro is very clear. This is not the end of the world; it's the beginning of a new age, and what is promised is a golden age.
Well, when the dust settles, Michael, what's left?
A new species of human being, liberated. Fully empowered, and Mother Earth, a planet that is liberated. I think that to really say what the choice is right now, George, it's you're either a Gaian or you're not. In other words, you believe that the fundamental rule of human existence has to spring from our relationship with this planet. Or you're on the other side, which says that you're here to kill the planet. And everybody that wants that way, that end, is probably going to get there. I believe there's going to be a separation of the world, one way or the other.
Will we still have our computers and our toys?
I think we'll probably have capabilities far beyond anything we could hope for or imagine. That's what evolution is all about.
So it's not the end of technology?
not the it is certainly the end of technology in a corporate environment predicated upon infinite growth.
And this is worldwide?
Yeah, but I think human existence is going to be immeasurably better with what's coming.
Would you call this the apocalypse?
All the apocalypse means in Greek is an unveiling, you know, is a full disclosure of the truth. So absolutely. Because what we're seeing now is all these governments, as all these banking institutions, as civilization crumbles around, and it's happening in spades all around the world, that as this continues, we are seeing a great many truths revealed. Some of them, I think, coming very soon are not going to be pleasant at all.
Michael, what do we see now with the mindset of people? Like the Middle East, they're all upset. The problems, you know, they're getting upset in Iran now over their currency devaluing. Mm-hmm. People are just whacked out these days. What's going on with them?
Well, and that's because all of that stuff, and trust me, I've been a journalist for a long time, 3 decades. Pretty experienced.
Longer than you were a cop.
Much. But what's clear to me is that all that is out there to keep people afraid. Yeah, these are very scary times on the one hand, but I see mainstream media as being a vehicle for a hypnotic program to keep people scared, on their edge, afraid, being sick, wanting to buy products, because as long as they're in fear, they're controllable. And I think that's how the human race has been managed for the last 5,000 years.
Of course, there's a difference between fear and being smart and ready.
Yes. But smart and ready is one thing. I mean, there was a time when it was utterly appropriate, which is what I did for years, to tell people to start growing your own food, you know, to get away from the city. And, you know, I helped start a pretty serious movement right now. There's 2 or 3 TV shows out there about, you know, doomers and preppers or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And there was a time when that was appropriate. I think we're past that time right now. The only thing that matters now is consciousness, truly where your head is.
Well, and explain that. When you talk about consciousness, what are we talking about?
Well, here we go to Greg Braden, and again, a monstrous tip of the hat. Greg not only has his own stuff, but he synthesizes. He pulls all this enormous scientific research. Clear demonstrations in particle physics, like the Professor Michio Kaku, enormous science out there now that shows that consciousness is what frequency is what determines what matter does and how it behaves. Our consciousness creates our reality, and that's the secret, I believe, that's been hidden from the human race for all these tens of thousands of years, and how we have been enslaved. But this understanding scientifically, when higher frequencies produce sacred geometry in water, or when love has a much higher frequency than fear does, that these frequencies determine the course of events. In other words, there are other dimensional activities that are, I think, happening now and accelerating on the planet.
How did you get to this point, Michael? 6 years ago, I never would have thought you'd be here in terms of this thought pattern.
There was the spiritual part was always there. It was like a switch got flipped in me this spring.
You kept it hidden.
Especially the stuff about ETs and UFOs, because I knew that the minute that I opened my mouth, I would have lost my ability to land the body blows that I did on people like John Deutsch and Don Rumsfeld.
Right, right. They would have laughed at you.
Yeah. But instead, you know, John Deutsch didn't get the Secretary of Defense. He quit at CIA, and Donald Rumsfeld suddenly resigned.
That's right. Well, what was the point for you, though? What was the turning point? What flipped it?
This spring. All the events that I became so aware of.
So it just happened, really?
Everything had gone. What happened this spring, George, was it reached a point where if somebody said to me, okay, Mike, what can we do to turn this around? And as of this spring, I had to objectively look at the world and say, nothing. In other words, there was nothing I could exhort people to do anymore. I was spinning my wheel.
Yeah.
And And so that mission, if you will, had been accomplished.
Do you feel differently?
I feel great. I'm free now. Basically, the message that I got from Mother Earth was they've had all the warnings they're going to get. You know, and that the same feeling hit many of us simultaneously. And then we all started getting moved around. You know, it's like Mother Earth has sounded general quarters. And, you know, I'm here in the Rockies and David Wilcox up there in Banff in Canada. And, you know, this is past the popcorn.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling, Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night. And I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light. Also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Jason King, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Timothy Banal, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.